Alrighty, folks, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm-Up Sessions podcast. This feels very strange to be doing another episode again. Feels like it's been forever. 1 week we shot two episodes, so we kind of got ahead of us, but then we also, I was at Origin last week, so we couldn't record. So it's been like two, three weeks since we've recorded something.
It's been a hot bit.
So it feels
hot,
weird.
I feel rough, it feels rusty. You replaced my other glass.
Breaking double wall glass.
Yeah. Nice. Vessels. It's back.
As always, pouring a little batch brew. And today, what do we have? What do we have in the craft?
Dude, got a gift sent by Grant Sanders.
Nice.
What's the right word? The previous?
Former
roaster, former roaster for a Bold Bean Coffee out in my old stomping grounds of Jacksonville, Florida. This is the Guatemala Geisha, natural processed.
Natural.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my reaction too.
Yeah,
little.
It's not bonkers. Yeah,
actually, yeah. I don't know. This might be a stretch, but I mean, it's still solid. Mm-hmm. I just had much bigger, higher expectations for it, especially tasting the Ethiopia that we just cupped.
Mm.
Ethiopia Natural, and I know it's stupid to compare a Guatemalan to an Ethiopian, but the roast was excellent on the Ethiopia. That's why I was expecting, oh, maybe this is going to be really outstanding, but I don't know.
Yeah. Did we cup this coffee? No.
Mm-mm.
We did not. Just San Rafael, San Marcos sounds familiar.
Yeah, it does sound familiar, actually. Mm-hmm. That's when I saw the label, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the Ethiopia was bonkers. I think this coffee is good.
Yeah, it
reminds me a lot of our El Bosque.
Huh?
A lot. I'm not comparing the two. They're night and day kind of different. But what I'm saying, it reminds me of not the texture, because Geisha's textures are always different.
There's something in the flavor note.
Yeah.
Like if you look at this cup as like a range of your whole experience, let's say the moment it hits your palate, the aftertaste, there's something in the middle that tastes it like the like the Bosque.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, I don't know, it goes through this weird thing, and then you're like, oh, okay, that's familiar, and then it keeps going, which is interesting.
It's this floral aspect that we had on the Bosque that reminded us of a Geisha. That because it reminds us of the Java, remember when we initially cupped it?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not exactly the same mouthfeel or the same flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
It just reminds me of maybe those florals, those classic floral notes in a Guatemalan coffee, which are not the same as the floral notes in like an Ethiopian coffee.
No.
Flavor wise. Yeah.
I think that's actually like a pretty under, probably what I would say is like an under. You don't really hear this being talked about as much as like the way you taste the floral note in different coffees comes through very differently.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird to think about. Like, both coffees can have lavender, but it's going to taste different whether that's in an Ethiopian or a Guatemalan or a Colombian.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, the sweetness is very unique on this coffee, too.
Yeah,
it's fine. The brew is fine. Great.
Yeah, the brew's solid.
Dialed.
I mean, you killed it on that brew. Yeah. So at least that's good. So, but that's the good thing about having friends in the industry, having other friends who are coffee fanatics, enthusiasts. Nothing like getting a bag in the mail. It's such a small gift,
or three.
But it goes, or three. Yeah.
It's such a solid hookup.
It's just like a small little tree, but puts a smile on your face enough to You know, yeah. leave you satisfied and enjoyed and all that stuff. So
good stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, before we get into this, I was listening to a Lex Fridman podcast today, and it was with Andrew Huberman, or I think that's his name. I could have just butchered his last name. He's a neuroscientist, really smart guy. He has so much good stuff to say. But something they were talking about is some people biologically, like genes, they have, like, it's in their, baked into their DNA, that when they smell popcorn, that sometimes, like, certain people have it in their DNA that it just smells like, excuse this, but it smells like puke, like vomit.
Yes, I resonate that, with that.
That, but it's like, it's kind of very few people, but it's like baked into their DNA, which just got me thinking, is just like, that's so interesting. I've literally never heard that before, but I'm like, imagine, like, you're like at a cupping table, and you, your DNA baked into you is like there are certain things you're picking up in coffees that are absolutely horrible, and there's nothing you could do about it because it's literally in your DNA to taste something. Kind of reminds me of like when we were cupping some Ethiopian coffees a while ago, or even like, you know, our Zelalema Limu coffee from a year ago where I liked it. You know, I gave Shay some coffee. He was pretty raw, just blown away by it. He's a Q grader. And then you were like, dude, it tastes like chicken noodle soup.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I remember that.
It's so fascinating.
Yeah. I also know, I don't remember the name of the roasting company, but there's a roasting company out there who literally hired one person who could taste medicinal defect, and that's it.
Yeah.
And when they cupped samples, they would just cup and make sure that defect wasn't in there, which I thought was pretty powerful. But to have that intense kind of like turn off from a flavor, to be able to pick it up almost instantly, it's pretty powerful. Yeah. Like medicinal, like, yeah, that's a big deal. That could be a big defect in green.
It's like a low-key like superpower that you have.
Yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, you know, on the other hand, imagine having it in your DNA that you just don't like the flavor, the taste of coffee. No. That's just horrible.
I mean, I prefer chicken noodle soup. I just don't want it in my coffee. Yeah. For a while, that coffee just, that's all I could think about. As soon as I sipped it, smelled it, that was it. And I mean, I know for a fact, I mix up certain flavor notes. Like, for example, when we had that coffee from Colombia, Wantama, I like the coffee, but I always picked up cardboard when all the other people that were cupping that coffee at cuppings, not just you and I, talking about when other folks cupped it, they were picking up cacao and milk chocolate.
Yeah.
For some reason, that coffee. Other coffees, I can pick out milk chocolate. That coffee, a lot of the times, I'm stuck with cardboard. So
yeah,
that's another reason why it's good probably to share.
To cup with other people.
Yeah, to cup with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to get too long into it, but I just read like an email newsletter from Scott Rayo, who said like one of the things about, one of the ways that you can become a better cupper is you should be tasting with other people. Mm-hmm. And he brings out how him and Ryan Brown, like he can pick up more roast defects, and Ryan Brown can pick up more like green defects.
That makes sense.
And so they can kind of play off of each other, which is helpful.
But, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it just got me thinking. But anyways, yeah, so just got back from Guatemala. I don't even know how we're going to structure this episode, to be honest, but we're talking about it because it was like, that's what was going on.
Yeah. First off, I'm still sad that I didn't get to go.
It's devastating.
That was part of the plan.
Dude, that was...
I mean, it was part of the plan to go, not to go. But I ended up not going, so that's a bummer.
That's horrible. Yeah. Like, it was... I don't know how you've been around coffee farms though. Mm-hmm. It just might have been in a different context than this trip. And shout out to you, Onyx Coffee, who was able to host me and take me around and all that jazz. And if you're looking for some tasty Guatemalan coffees, friends, look no further. Onyx Coffee is an excellent importer, and they're local to Bellingham, so they're like good friends of ours just down the street. Yeah. But yeah, it was you know, not to say the least, it was, you missed out.
Of course.
But even though like you've been to a coffee farm, mm-hmm. like I said, like the context of it is so much more different. Yeah. The experience is completely different. And there are some like plus and minuses that I'm mm-hmm. now realizing looking back at the trip. But overall it was like an extraordinary experience. Like there's just really something special about, you know, whether that's meeting and seeing coffee producers that we've been working with for years now, mm-hmm. meeting them and their families and connecting with them and having a short little conversation even, and seeing the farms and everything. It's like such a surreal experience. And I know it might be just special because, you know, it was my first time at Origin. But I will say also, it's just so ingrained into a lot of why we started Even Mirror.
Right.
So this felt just so natural, so powerful, so excellent to be on this trip and experiencing all those things.
Yeah, because I would say your experience on this trip was much different than anything that I've talked about when I shared with you about going to places of origin. Mm-hmm. Because my predominant purpose being there was not to taste coffee, was not to meet producers. I happened to be in nations that were producing coffee near coffee farms. I mean, I lived at a coffee farm for, it was a little over 2 weeks, mm-hmm. but I wasn't working with anything coffee related. Like I technically could say I worked at a coffee farm, but again, it wasn't like that. And majority of my experience was around kind of simple, basic commodity style of coffee where folks would grow it and then bring it to the local market and sell it to the local community kind of thing. Rather than, sounds like from what you shared, the experience you had was like very professional, yet not professional as in just simply business. It was also very relational. So that's what I'm intrigued about, because I can't imagine going to Origin, because I haven't done that, with other quote unquote business men and women, because you were basically going with other coffee companies.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, it was nice because we only had two other roasters with us.
Oh, that's great. That's a small team.
I think Vice and Virtue Coffee and Lost Coffee, which was out of Colorado, I think. So it was a pretty small group, which mm-hmm. I think was so awesome. Like I can't even imagine experiencing that with, you know, 10, 12 different roasters. I probably wouldn't enjoy it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy that it was a very small group, which just allowed for a lot more flexibility, whether it's last minute travel situations, accommodations, you know, getting around places. Like things are just so more efficient in a small group and so much more personal. Because then you can, you know, whether that's you're talking with a producer or a cupping or everything, it's just, everything is just so tight-knit. Right. So I think that was an extremely beneficial part. And I think actually, you know, hopefully we'll be going to Indonesia in a couple months. Mm-hmm. That will be even more epic.
Right.
Because that's just nobody else, just us, mm-hmm. you know, with the few connections that we have down there. That's, I'm actually even just as much looking forward to that. And probably even more so than this past trip, but it was just excellent.
On top of that, you got to film a lot, so I'm like super stoked to see all the footage. I saw a little bit. You posted some things on Instagram. Definitely my favorite. I want to know what your favorite experience was at Origin, but my favorite vicarious experience was watching you put on the bee suit. Well, tell us about the bee suit, please.
Dude, I will say there's lots of footage coming. Unfortunately, like it's really hard. Like for those who have YouTube channels who listen to this, will know it's a lot harder to film yourself in the act. And something I'm learning is I'm way more comfortable, and I'm like me behind the camera with the camera in hand. I'm playing more of like a director's role, and I can get all the stuff that looks good, that's everything, mm-hmm. without necessarily thinking about, oh, I have to be in front of the camera also simultaneously, like a vlogger. So that was really challenging, even though, so I didn't vlog very much at all.
That's what I thought, I assumed.
Because yeah. I was just like, man, this is just too much. It's overwhelming. I'm just going to focus on what I know I can do better and then work around that in the editing afterwards, yeah. you know? And so there were definitely some challenges, but that being said, mm-hmm. there are some videos coming to the YouTube channel, hopefully sooner than later. It just takes so much time to edit these of things. Course. So, but hopefully we'll be releasing that sooner than later.
Yeah.
But that being said, the B suit, it was excellent, honestly.
Did you bring your camera into the B suit?
Oh, 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought that, that wouldn't be possible.
I mean, it wasn't like inside the B suit, but yeah. I was just like barehanded.
Yeah.
Holding the camera, shooting. It's insane. Like these bees coming out yeah. of those freaking, I don't even know what they're called. They're like these bee hives.
Yeah.
That are like inside these boxes, crates or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was extraordinary. Yeah. It was actually something that I'm like, I didn't realize I'd enjoy this so much.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, dude, I'm going here for coffee stuff. And then all of a sudden, now I'm at a bee farm.
Yeah.
Which is cool because Jorge Mendez, which we have his coffee. Right. We visited his family. Dude, he's an extremely successful, like, just business savvy entrepreneur. Like, it was so cool visiting nice. Him. Like, he has like an acupuncture, like small little business for the village. Like,
wonderful.
Uses the bee sting, like venom or like stingers.
Stingers, yeah.
For like healing locals, like with this ancient practice. Like,
that's amazing.
Holds bees.
Yeah.
Grows coffee, our El Panal, recently mm-hmm. bought another coffee farm, which
let's go.
Was pretty exciting. Yep. His like sons help him with everything.
Yep.
And then apparently now they, I mean, they also own some kind of wood business, like mm-hmm. just insane. Like this family just multifaceted. Yep. But anyways, like we went and visited his little bee farm, got suited up in those bee suits, which is excellent. Nice. It felt a little intimidating yeah. and crazy. I was like, yeah. I don't know what to expect, but I'm like, yeah. hey, I'm like, I'm afraid of getting stung, but I'm like, dude, I'm only here like once.
Might as well get
like,
stung.
Might as well, like, I don't know, come out of here like getting dragged out.
Yeah.
Like maybe like on the verge of death yeah. or something. Have Jorge like shield me with his acupuncture or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was extraordinary. Got up and close. The footage is looks insane. Like bees just like swarming everywhere. I got stung on my hand.
Nice.
Almost got stung multiple times, but the guys were flicking those bees off. Yeah. So they the sons were joking because I mean they use like they think bee stings are actually really healthy for you.
Oh,
it's
wow.
very ancient. Like
yeah.
But yeah, so they were laughing because they're like, dude, the only thing you missed out on, we wish you'd gotten stung like 10 more times.
Whoa.
Just for your personal wild. Health. Yeah. They're like, they were just sharing stories yeah. how they're like, you know, it's kind of nice. Sometimes you're getting stung like maybe 15 times or so. And then it's not bad until you start feeling a little sleepy. They're like, but that's perfect right yeah. there. So they're
that's wild.
Yeah, they're very like yeah. traditional. I mean, they speak like an ancient like Mayan language called Mam, which is like normal Spanish speakers probably wouldn't understand it.
Oh wow.
So sure. it's very like yep. borderline, like very indigenous mm-hmm. to those villages up there and just very interesting. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, dude, got into a bee suit for the first time in my life. And
I mean, you're semi-familiar with bees because parents kept bees, but this is a whole different story.
No, it's no,
a whole
different this is not even compared.
Oh, okay, great.
Like, this is bees.
Good. Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
You know, my thought is what I hear you saying about the Mendez families, like they're entrepreneurial. They are really business savvy. And also it sounds like the farm, El Panal, is actually a multi-generational farm. Is that right? So mm-hmm. is there someone before Jorge or is Jorge the original
the
purchaser? And, oh, okay. And then his sons are your age, right?
They're a little older.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, there'll be a small little story film
perfect
coming yeah. out on their family. It won't be long. Once again, it was really hard to shoot because it's like they're not very used to cameras in your face. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense, you know, yeah. like you're like a simple farmer and just taking care of your family and
for
then
sure.
some white people show up with big cameras, you know, like, so it's like, I get it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's really valuable for us because people need to hear their stories. And so, there'll be a little story explaining all that, but Jorge, I mean, he himself started off as a picker, and you guys will hear this in the story, but he literally was like, if I could only have one tree farm, one coffee tree in my life, if I could just own one plant, I'll be satisfied. Wow. That was his dream. And then now he owns this massive El Panal farm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely beautiful. Like, you're standing on the ridge overlooking these valleys. I mean, Huehuetenango has insane terrain. The terrain is unreal. Like, truly extravagant terrain. Like, the PNW has insane terrain, but there it's just very different. And it's insane. And so you're like standing on an insane incline, very steep incline. Like, these trees, like, we try to like walk up like outside the beaten path, like up on these trees, and you're like slipping and falling and sliding down. Like, you know, if the trees weren't so dense, I bet you could slip and fall and just slide for maybe like 20, 30 feet down.
Wow.
That's like, it's steep.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's insane how the pickers are picking those cherries. Truly extraordinary. Yeah. And, but also everything's super beautiful. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So apart from the classic, well, we talk about high quality coffee gets handpicked. Would it, in that kind of terrain, is there even machinery that if you decide not to handpick that could do? Because I know in bigger producing nations, that's common to use machinery to pick.
With that terrain, I don't think it's possible to use machinery. It's insane terrain. Yeah. Like, I don't think very many people from the United States would be able to manage that kind of a work flow. Yeah,
that's wild.
I've worked on a farm before. Like, that was my first part-time, I think, full-time job at the Linden Raspberry Farms. And that, you know, machine goes through, sort, picks all the berries, and I just did a lot of sorting. Mm-hmm. But, dude, this is, like, this is treacherous work. It's insane.
Yeah.
That was a very eye-opening. Like, I'm struggling to find words to it because it's that bonkers to see people picking on such an insane incline. Mm-hmm. So that's like your body's under pressure, your legs are under pressure, you're at this insane high elevation, which I'm sure they're a little more used to the elevation, but conditions are treacherous, and you're carrying like, you're hiking up to, you know, the tops of these farms, and then you have maybe 60 kilos on your back that you have to hike all the way back down.
That's a lot.
You know, like 30, 60, you're like carrying you're carrying a sack.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like,
that's a lot.
It's truly humbling to see that. Yeah. And that's how your coffee gets just down the hill from the farm.
That's insane. Yeah. So speaking of that, so the coffee is picked, moves. You went to also processing areas, right?
Yes.
I think one thing that became more real, other than reading the books, reading the articles, hearing the stories, what part of processing is like, oh, like, this hits home?
Yeah, I think it's just much different than seeing footage or hearing about it or knowing the process or reading about it. Than just being there and experiencing it. Like, it just hits very different. It becomes very much more personal and real to you, because up until then, it's kind of stuff you just have to kind of use your imagination. Yeah, of, man, what does this sound like? What does this look like? What's the operations looking like and stuff? So I will say, though, like, it's not as intense, or it's not as peculiar, or it's not as advanced as we think. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is very bare bones. A lot of it is very mechanical, very raw, like, very, very, like, raw. And I'm a, I mean, I'm assuming mostly, of course, probably like some of the higher end farms around the world, like Alita Estate, you know, in Panama or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have much better infrastructure, mm-hmm. but this was very raw, very mechanical. A lot of it was, you know, a lot of stuff needed to be done by hand.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, from the little footage that you showed, majority of it was washed coffees.
Yeah, most of it. A little bit. We definitely saw some naturals from the different farms that we got to visit. Yeah. I will say that this was interesting. Walking by some natural coffees, it smells exactly like it tastes. Mm. That clicked 100% because I was like, this makes 100% sense why they taste boozy. Why there's a strong by fermenty, I don't mean like vegetal. By fermenty in this context, I'm going to use, it's kind of like a sweet kombucha.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like sense. Where it's intense. Like
borderline wine.
Yeah. It's intense, like overripe fruit, like squashed overripe fruit almost. Like mm-hmm. it's just the smell just sits in the air and you're like, It's so intense. Yeah. It's crazy. But it smells the way the cherries are drying there, mm-hmm. exactly the way it tastes.
Wow. That's wild.
Like that was a very shock. I'm like, I didn't realize that it was so close, but it makes sense why naturals now taste the way they do. Like it's crazy. So
that's one thing I have not seen at any of the farms I was at was natural processed coffee. Yeah. Majority was just like, you know, parchment on the side of the road on tarps drying, kind of very, like you're saying, very low key, very bare bones and very simple for sure. Like, I mean, you probably experienced something way more professional than I did because I remember, I have this photo, so I need to find it, pull it up. I remember this lady kind of flipping, you know, coffee, which at that point I had no idea what she was doing, why she was doing it. But I remember chickens walking right through it.
Yeah.
I was like, dang, who knows what's getting in that coffee? But, but yeah.
Oh, God.
So, but yeah, right, go ahead. What were we going to say?
I was going to say, it wasn't quite like chickens walking around.
Sure. Yeah, like I said, what I saw was not professional. So you went to El Panal. You met with Jorge Mendez, whose coffees we're serving right now. But you also went and saw the Via Toros, which we've met in Portland, which we've served mm-hmm. their coffees as well. How was seeing Roden again?
It was great. It was excellent.
I bet.
It felt like home.
Yeah.
I didn't see their farm because their farm is very out there, mm-hmm. but I did meet them at like one of their like cupping labs.
You cupped with them?
Yeah, I cupped with them.
That's awesome.
That was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Like just like, yeah, it felt like home. Like, I mean, I told you this, I'm not going to get too much into details because, but it felt kind of, felt very, very close to home to see both Roden and like Aurelio, the legend, Via Toro, Jenner, seeing them, but also like, even though I've never met Jorge Mendez, seeing them and their family was, felt natural, felt mm-hmm. like, I don't know. It's like when you see like an old friend and you just leave off where you started, you know, or start where you left off.
Yeah.
It just feels very natural. And so even with Jorge's family, it just like, they're, you know, the sons were very relatable, very chatty with me. It was great.
Yeah,
we talked about the farm, the coffee, how much people loved the coffee back in the United States. And they were very jazzed about that. The Roden was very like, it was just so welcoming.
Yeah.
It just felt second nature. And
that's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. So
did Jorge have any comments on our second generation bags? Because you remember he had our old bag.
I actually forgot about that.
Dandy Ward brought over. Yeah.
Yeah. No comments on the second generation bag, I will say, unfortunately. but I will say he said something. He was pretty stoked about getting the coffee. Their sons were pretty happy about it too. They like, you know, everybody around, the family members crowded around, passed it around, smelled it, like
that's great.
It was really great. But they it was an awesome experience,
mm-hmm.
to bring it full circle and bring literally the coffee that came from this farm, bring it back roasted, ready to be enjoyed with, you know, his name on the bag. It was a very surreal, like, exchange, very monumental, that I think, like, it was the first time I've ever done that.
Yeah.
And it'll always be the first time.
Yeah.
There will never be another first time like that ever.
Yeah.
With, you know, I think they were very grateful, very humbled.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, the vibe, the atmosphere was just very, very mutual.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like there was, at least I didn't, like, one dimensionalness of, like, hey, I'm white and I live in the United States and I have all this stuff, and like, there was no hierarchy, there was no nothing. It was just like, this is what we're doing, and we're all family, and we're all trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And something that Jorge said actually really surprised me, because, and it surprised me, and it didn't, because he's also, like, a very much so an entrepreneur, but he said, hey, like, we're sorry if the coffee doesn't taste up to par. Our goal is to make it taste really, really good so that it's easier for you to sell it, because we understand that you need to sell it first before you can support us and buy our coffee and and buy the coffee that we have.
Yeah.
To me, hearing that was the last thing I was expecting, because it showed such a rich understanding of entrepreneurship, of business, of international business, and showed such a clear approach to, like, no, I need to do my side of the job so that you can get a beautiful product, so that you can turn around and sell it to the people at home, so that it can come back full circle to me.
Yep.
Like, he took on the responsibility to make sure it's tasty, so that I could go back, like, so that I can have a better, so my business is more successful.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
For a producer to be thinking, like, I don't know, I've just never heard that before, and maybe it is normal, but a producer would cared about how my business was doing and realized that he plays a big part in that, depending on the quality that was coming out of his farm.
Yeah.
And that at the end of the day, for me to buy more coffee from him, he realized that his needs to be better so that it moves faster.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, that just goes to show is that people buying Jorge Mendez's coffee, which has become a mere staple, has become a mere favorite for a lot of people. People buying his coffee primarily empowers us, but primarily directly empowers Jorge Mendez. Mm-hmm. He understands it, and I hope the folks listening to this podcast understand it just as much.
Yep.
Because we need to realize that what you're investing your money into and what you're buying actually directly leads back to the producer and the farmer. Mm-hmm. And of course, not always. I mean, for us, I think it directly does lead back to, because we want to, like, our vision has always been, how do we partner long-term, build these meaningful relationships with these producers so that it creates more security for them, more security for us, and leaves people with a tasty product every year. You know, August, September, October, when fresh guats land and there's going to be an El Panal Jorge Mendez at Mir. Like, I hope, like, and that's not for all coffee roasting companies, but for us, that we want to do that. We want to be partnering with producers, the same producers, over and over again, so that when you do buy a bag, it all ends up benefiting everybody.
Yeah. There's, what I hear you saying is, like, a lot of mutual empathy across the whole supply chain, going from the producer to us, and also to folks who buy our coffee. And to hear that, even though we don't hear this conversation a lot, like, I rarely hear this conversation within the coffee community, it's but true. To hear that, you know, producers and farmers get that, like, recognize that, see the importance and value of that as a roaster and a roasting company, gives me peace of mind and trust.
Yeah.
Like, trust is built, because if, you know, Jorge is understanding where we're at and we understand where they're at, then it's safe to a degree. There's still risk involved. I'm not saying like all our risk is done, but there's relational and security there, which I think is really, really powerful. And that is a sustainable way to grow our business. That is a sustainable way for Jorge to continue to sell coffee. And then that's also like very good security for folks who love this coffee and want to continue to experience it. It's a win-win. And you're right. That is exactly what like inspired me to actually like open a roasting company and not open a cafe. Like this is it. That's yeah. what, that was the Indo vision. That was why I said, maybe I should, you know, step down from my current job and go into coffee. Is exactly what you're saying. So to hear like other producers, like they recognize that and they're also sending it that way, that's inspiring.
Yeah, the power of, I mean, just there's some things that you can envision and dream and think about. But I think when, for example, for myself, hearing that firsthand was truly extraordinary, because that's the dream of what a supply chain should look like.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people are asking for, are looking for, not just in coffee, but everywhere, is mm-hmm. how do we deal more fairly and more relationally? And I know it sounds kind of utopian and mm-hmm. like perfect, which it may not always be like this, but when everything is based off of relationships mm-hmm. and based off of just like, hey, I get you, you get me, and I need to do my part for you to succeed, and you need to do your part for me to succeed, we're all in this together mm-hmm. and we're on completely opposite sides of the right. supply chain, and we're all just, we all have to do our part. And keeping and relationship not only builds trust, but it builds accountability.
Right, exactly.
So it's mm-hmm. not just like, oh, I can just do whatever I want, there's somebody who's gonna buy my coffee, whatever, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. No, it's like, oh, I'm gonna hold myself to a higher standard because there are other people in the supply chain yeah. that depend on me to do my part.
Yep.
And if I don't, well, it may not be the end of the world, because I think that's where relationship still needs to be maintained. Mm-hmm. If Jorge produces not an 85.5 coffee, it produces an 85 or 84.5, are we going to buy it? Probably, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where I think relationship steps in those difficult, you know, dicey situations.
Yep.
But yeah, it builds a lot of accountability throughout the whole chain. And
yeah, and relational accountability is much different than contractual yes, accountability.
1,000%. Yeah,
because yes. you can cancel a contract, pay the fees, and you're gone. You know, you don't even know if you've hurt anyone's feelings, or you probably didn't 100%. Hurt your own. You might not even feel guilty about it. But when you have something that's built based on this mutual connection, it's very hard. And I think that's one of the things that, even outside of like coffee in any industry, one of the things we do is we avoid relationships so that we don't feel bad when we hurt people. That's like the most simplest, easiest way to say it.
100%. 100%. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was exactly what was on my mind. Mm-hmm. That it goes above and beyond contracts, it goes above and beyond everything, and now you're actually working out of a place of like emotional intelligence and a deeper connection than just paperwork and just fulfilling stuff. It actually becomes, I mean, it just becomes like raw good love. Yep. Relationship.
Yep.
Connection. And actually something maybe we can just land the plane on this, but I will say, like, going to Origin is not anything, you know, at least for most of the part, maybe with the exception of like Christopher Farron or something, you right. know, when you're yeah. producing your own recipes or something. But most of the time, you know, you're just there to just see things and just to look at things, mm-hmm. get content for marketing purposes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But this is the reason why you also go, at least for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even just to see things or just to capture things. It's literally just to say, hey, Jorge, I've been buying your coffee for the last few years.
Yep.
I'm here now in person, in the flesh. I'm the person that's been drinking your coffee. I enjoy yep. it. I love it. And how can I sit down? We literally had their family like made some drinks for us, gave us a ton of honey to enjoy and take back home. And it was just like sitting around the table talking with their family.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why I want to go to Origin.
Yep. That's big.
To be familiar with, hey, this is who I am, this is who you are, and establishing that relationship even more. And I want to do that year over year after year.
Yeah. And that's why I'm excited to go to Indo, because 100%. It will feel like going back to my previous home because I spent so much time there. And then seeing Taylor, like Taylor was in the United States and we didn't get to connect in person because he was busy in Florida. We were busy and we couldn't fly. It was expensive. And now to be able to reconnect with Taylor in person and then see the producers and farmers that he's made a relationship. So it's just going to be like friendships, a bunch of friendships and a bunch of love all around. And that to me is exciting.
Yeah.
Like that's awesome. I'm stoked. It's good. That's some good stuff. I'm still, you know, slightly upset I didn't get to go, but I'll get over it sooner or later.
I mean,
you know.
You can go next year.
Yeah, that's so. For sure. I'm excited for that.
Yeah. But, wow, there's so much more that I think that we could talk about, but it'll leak out in some future podcasts, I'm sure.
Of course.
We'll bring it up. We'll talk about it. But that's a wrap for this episode of the Coffee Roastro Warm-Up Sessions podcast. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Hopefully you didn't miss us too much over this short little podcast break. More stuff to come. But yeah, thank you so much if you made it this far. Keep an eye out for more YouTube videos coming. With some more visuals of Jorge, his family, some processing, some coffee growing, all the good stuff. So stay tuned. But as always, friends, remember, reflect what's good.